Progressive Radio News Hour with Stephen Ledman, Thursdays at 11 a.m. and weekends at 1 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Welcome to the Progressive Radio News Hour. I'm Steve Lindman, trying to get my guest this morning. He is Emmanuel Wallerstein. Emmanuel is a Yale University senior research scholar. He's done extraordinary research focusing on what he calls three domains of world systems analysis: the historical development of modern world systems, the structure of knowledge, and the contemporary crisis of the capitalist world economy. So if we get him on the line, we want to get his latest views on what's going on. Anybody who listens to this program regularly knows there's always plenty going on, and none of it on this show is any good. We really have a mess on our hands, and it seems to keep getting worse. Emmanuel sees change down the road, not coming soon. Change happens slowly, and maybe it can creep up on you when you least expect it. But he sees change coming. One of his views is that he sees the system that we now have no longer existing maybe three or four decades down the road. And he believes it'll be replaced by one of two alternatives. Neither he nor anybody can know what it is. It will either be a society more egalitarian than the one we have now, or it'll be something much worse. Certainly the path we're on right now does not augur very well for the former, because things most definitely are not getting better. They're not getting safer. They're not getting more egalitarian. Just the opposite. So unless that can change, maybe his second alternative is the one that will be down the road. Well, at my tender age, unless I maybe make the Guinness Book of World Records, I won't be around to see it if it happens in three or four decades. The way things are going, it definitely accelerated ever since Bush came into office, and Obama has maintained the pace. So maybe it'll arrive even sooner than three or four decades. But again, the way it's going, it looks pretty harsh. Oh, I do hope we can get Emmanuel on. I've wanted to get him on this program for so long, and he hasn't been easy to get, but he agreed to come on today. You never know, something may have come up. We'll keep trying to get him, and if he joins us, we'll pick up the program with him and get his views. My views are very much on the dark side. I don't see much to cheer about in what's happening, and a year ago, I did a one-year assessment. I brought it out, part one, on the 16th of December. I did a two-part year one assessment of Barack Obama, his administration, his policies, and I split it in two parts because it was very, very long. I have another one coming out. I'm going to hold off just a little bit because we have a lame duck session, which there was none last year, of course. Lame duck because there'll be a 112th Congress taking over on the 3rd of January. So between now and then, we have Congress in session. I think they hope to break next week, but you never know. And I'm just waiting because maybe there'll be more horrors enacted before this Congress adjourns. And if there's anything critical that I want to include in my year two account, I do want to get it in. And there was something I spotted just a day or so ago, a bill that passed the Senate that is not a good bill. And it still is a work in progress because it goes to the House. They may or may not act, depending on how much time they have. But it's an amendment. It concerns whistleblowers. And it has a couple of good things in it, but it also has harsh things in it. It'll be in my article. My article last year I called Obama Year One, Betrayal and Failure. And my article this year is called Obama Year Two, More Betrayal and Failure. I just can't imagine anybody who's paying attention, even the most loyal Obama supporters, when he was a candidate, you know, the way hope springs eternal. Well, it never did in me, because I know the way the system operates, and there's barely a dime's worth of difference between either party, and it doesn't matter whether it's Obama, Bush, or the man in the moon, or the woman in the moon, or maybe an electronic image. It literally doesn't make any difference who sits in the Oval Office. It's the system that matters. The system matters. And the powers that control the system, and that is maintained. That is the power of big money. The power of big money, mainly headquartered in Wall Street, because the financial community has such a dominant hold on the economy. We discussed it a little bit last Saturday with my guest, James Russell. And it's crucial. He mentioned a figure that I wasn't up to date on it. I remember I mentioned the figure a couple of years ago when I wrote about the financial interest in the country, when it had a much less, it still had a stranglehold, but it had a less dominant stranglehold some years back. And he mentioned the percentage, 27% of GDP. Seems to be growing because the financial community is so powerful. The big interests keep getting bigger and bigger and more powerful. And there's no question that the institution that controls the nation's money controls the nation. Money is the lifeblood of the nation. And anybody, any power that controls it literally has the power. They can either keep the economy going, keep the nation going, or they could bring it to a dead halt, literally. How could you fund wars? How could you fund anything? Any of the appropriations coming out of Congress without enough money to do it. So they control it. And the Federal Reserve, of course, is their tool. Bernanke is just a hired hand. The 12 governors are just hired hands. But the real power is in Wall Street. They own the majority interest. That's the only way to fix the country is to get rid of that system. Federal Reserve Act of 1913. We've talked about it on this program. And Ellen Brown, who comes on often, her incredible book, Web of Debt, she explains the system so terrifically and solutions on how to fix it that, of course, the people in power will do everything possible to keep from happening. But that, to me, that's the only way to fix the country. We need to change the power of money. And I mean, the country is on life support. We, the people, Main Street is on life support, literally on life support. Because the policies coming out of Washington, they've been ongoing for at least the past 30 years, have been transferring the wealth of most people into the hands of the very tiny elite few, the elite 1%, to really the elite 1%. That encompasses a lot of people numerically, but the elite 1% that has a stranglehold in the country, they make out just fine. But Main Street has been suffering deeply. They've been eroded. The interests of Main Street have been eroding for at least the past three decades, really beginning in the late Carter administration when he was a little bit, a little bit more Rooseveltian when he came in. I say a little bit. But he left being much more Reaganite than Rooseveltian when he left. He started getting more conservative and instituting conservative policies like deregulation, poison deregulation. In other words, let the gangs run free and do whatever they want. Let industry do whatever it wants, as unregulated as possible. And, of course, they do. They take full advantage. I mean, they take full advantage when they were regulated. Unregulated or barely regulated, they literally do what they want. So that was the trend that Carter began. Reagan continued it extremely. Senior Bush continued it. Clinton was even more extreme than Reagan, Bush, of course, was more extreme than Clinton, and Obama, I believe, is even more extreme than Bush. My God, he literally handed the nation's money supply, rampant printing, trillions. We don't even know how much Wall Street got since the crisis broke in fall 2007. We don't know because the Fed won't tell us, but the Treasury was looted. We don't know how much money the Fed actually created. They don't really print it, you know that. It's all computer keystrokes. And it's credit literally created out of thin air. Not the folding stuff you have in your wallet or the change in your pocket. That amounts to nothing. Nothing. It's all that massive credit they created. But some people who are very savvy believe we're talking about many, many trillions of dollars. Literally in their hands for their interest to speculate, to secrete offshore and tax-free havens. And we get crumbs. We get crumbs. You know, temporary unemployment insurance extensions. And then the right-wing rails at all this does is keep disincentivize people to want to go back to work. They want to go back to work. There just aren't enough jobs for them with the unemployment rate getting around the 23% level, the real unemployment rate calculated the way it was back in 1980. Not the jerry-rigged 9.8 number, which is pretty bad by itself, but it's a fake number. And even the Labor Department has a so-called U6. U6. U3, I believe, is at 9.8. And U6 is something like, I haven't checked it lately. I think it's north of 17%. That's out of the Labor Department. But the real figure, before they change the whole mechanism of calculation to basically sanitize the number and make it look better, that is roughly about 23%. And I mean, it could get a little better before getting worse, but before this horror, this economic horror that Main Street is going through, I just can't imagine that it won't get worse. It could take a good while, could take years, and we could be in this mess for the rest of this decade, maybe even beyond. And of course, ordinary people, working Americans, are the ones who are hurt the most. Plus, we have endless wars. The country literally has a permanent war policy. There's no doubt about it. The most astonishing statistic I have ever run across, it's documented in a book I have by War Churchill. He's got it there in black and white, that this country literally since 1776 and really before that, but since 1776 when we declared our independence, we have literally been at war every single year at home and or abroad with no exceptions. I simply can't imagine anything like that. But there it is in black and white in his book. It's called On the Justice of Roosting Chickens, if I have the title precise. On the Justice of Roosting Chickens. And that's besides all the CIA shenanigans since they were instituted in 1947. Which was more an agency, the idea behind the planners who wanted it, and Harry Truman was rather uneasy about the whole thing, but he was convinced to go along because the people behind it said, well, we really need a good intelligence apparatus. But what they really had in mind was a real mischief-making apparatus to depose democratic regimes they didn't like, to install the ones, the despots that they do like, to run around the world assassinating people, to do whatever they want lawlessly. That's what the people behind it really had in mind when they wanted a CIA. So calling it an intelligence agency is almost a secondary function. It's really a murder incorporated agency, but you can't name it that, of course. I guess we still don't have Emmanuel on the phone. Oh, I'm disappointed. I'm going to try. If he doesn't come on, I'm going to try to get him rescheduled. I had to schedule him a couple of months in advance, the earliest date that he said he could come on. Oh, I'm crushed. I'm crushed that we haven't gotten him. I was so looking forward to today's program. I promise I will get him back. I will get him back because he has so much. He's a very deep thinker. and he's been at this for so many years. And I really wanted to hear what he had to say himself, his latest thinking. And I know listeners would very much want to hear what he has to say. I'm just a retired small business guy who researches a lot of topics. I'm not a great scholar like he is. I do my best, and I'm on stuff all the time, literally turning out articles on a daily basis. At least I have been of late. Today I got two out. People ask me whether I sleep or not. Oh, indeed, I do sleep, and I eat a good, healthy diet. How else could I do this if I didn't do those things? I'm not Superman. I may be manic, but I'm not Superman at age 76. I wasn't Superman at age 26. Who is, except Superman? Who, when I was age 6 or 8 or 10, I really thought there was a Superman. My favorite evening cereal. I think it came on evenings back then on radio. There was no TV back then, but it did come on. I think it did come on daily, and I can even remember asking my mother when I was probably about 8 years old. I think I had it in my mind that eating garlic made you very strong, and I think I once asked her, if I eat garlic every day, will I grow up to be Superman? And she didn't want to deflate me, so she didn't really say yes, but she didn't say no. So I had high hopes at age 8. Well, you know, flying and all that's faster than the speeding, but well, anyway. Oh, if I was Superman, I could do something about the mess that we have right now. There'd be nothing they could do to stop me. I could stop them. Well, that's another issue. But anyway, war continues. The deprivation of millions in the country continues. People losing their homes, poverty growing, record numbers on food stamps. It goes on and on and on and on. And we have a Democrat in the White House, certainly not a Roosevelt-type Democrat, and even Roosevelt was a patrician who didn't act out of benevolence, and he didn't do it at all in his first couple of years in office. He was more Hoover than Roosevelt in his first 2 years. But he and some enlightened corporatists decided that conditions were so bad that they needed to give something to save capitalism. Otherwise, they might really have a problem on their hands. If this mass revolution in the streets, the power of the people absolutely is more powerful than the government. And maybe the Marines they might call out might not be so supportive if they thought their family was in the streets. They might just want to throw their guns down or maybe keep their guns and join them. So there was great consternation back then. Well, there's a lot of strife going on in Europe right now. It has not happened here in this country. I'm waiting. When are people going to realize they've been scammed and do something about it? Yesterday in Greece, maybe today, Greece has had a number of uprisings. They did some weeks back, then it cooled down. And yesterday, there was a one-day nationwide strike. They shut the country down yesterday. Greece is small, I think around 11 million people. But they shut the country down, mainly the capital, Athens. But there was some pretty strong violence in the streets, real strong stuff, because the austerity that's been imposed in steps, I believe, mean and nasty stuff. Needlessly, none of this needs to be imposed. Why is it imposed? Because the bankers want their pound of flesh. These countries are deeply in debt. What they should do is default, what Argentina did back in 2000. They didn't entirely default, but they partially defaulted. They partially stiffed the bankers and they got away with it. So why doesn't Greece do it? Why doesn't Ireland do it? Why doesn't Spain do it? Why doesn't Italy do it? Because the bankers want their pound of flesh. If the bankers were stiffed instead of the people, none of this needs to happen. But the austerity is very severe, mass layoffs. You know, the IMF prescription, structural adjustments, mass layoffs, mass privatizations, mass loss of mass cuts in wages, mass loss of benefits, on and on and on and on. Make the people suffer, not the corporate interests, especially not the bankers. And that's the way the system is throughout the so-called capitalist world. More benign in some places, far less in many others. certainly less here in the U.S., less in Eastern Europe. Eastern Europe is a disaster. It's been a while since I've looked at what's happened, but countries like Latvia, Ukraine, Hungary, the state of the people, conditions for people in these countries are absolutely abysmal. Well, they're getting worse everywhere, spreading away to Europe. Look what's going on in the UK. A lot of cuts have either happened or are planned and will come. And the most recent one was a tripling of college tuition for students. Now, it's a lot cheaper to go to college in the UK than it is here. But it's a lot more expensive now. Well, the students got out on the street and rioted. They even attacked, you heard about this, they attacked the Rolls Royce, of course, of the Prince of Wales and his wife on the way to the opera or the theater, whatever it was. Well, somebody threw a rock or something or a brick and broke a window. Well, if I were the prince, what he should have done was gotten out of the car and said, "I'm with you." Then he would have been embraced, not attacked. But a Rolls Royce on the way to the theater, when these kids, a lot of them won't be able to afford to go to school. They'll have to drop out. And that's what they're really upset about. And they should be upset, because there's no reason in the world to do what's been done. But there's a lot more coming. People get the pain. Not the people who run the country, not the people who benefit from the pain of the people. They profit by it. So that's going on pretty much in Western countries. There's only one solution, and that's people power. So again, I'm waiting. When will it happen here? When will people realize that they've literally been scammed? There's a new survey out showing that the approval rating of Congress just hit an all-time low. I think the number was 13%, and the previous all-time number was 14%. Yet Obama still hovers in the high 40s. I, for the life of me, don't understand why. Why isn't Obama at 13%? Because he is at least as bad, maybe worse, than the Congress. It's the illusion that people live under, because they see him front and center all the time, reciting platitudes, people-friendly platitudes. They're lies. They're lies. He says one thing and does another. Read my article last year, Obama Year One, Parts 1 and 2. You can easily Google it, or it's on my blog. Came out mid-December last year. Obama Year One, Betrayal and Failure. And probably early next week. I don't want to hold it too long. I want to get it out before Christmas. At least a couple of 3 days before Christmas, maybe next Monday and Tuesday, I'll get out part one. And it will be on my blog, which is Steve Lindman blog. That's the way I access it. All my articles are in chronological order. If you go there, you can go back to December 2009. You can find year one. Now you'll find year two. And you'll go through what I think are the most important things that characterize his administration, the policies that have been enacted, the agenda that's being undertaken and continued. It's a real picture of the Obama administration. I'll probably do it again next year. I've written about so much of this through the year as big stuff has happened. So this year, well, I've covered stuff like healthcare reform, so-called financial reform. I covered the situation in Haiti, the U.S. militarization, and literally, well, Haiti is a U.S. colony. Washington was behind the rigged election that just took place. The crisis in the Gulf, the so-called crisis in Northeast Asia right now with North Korea, all fabricated out of Washington. On and on, Obama, for the first time ever in U.S. history, targeting U.S. citizens for assassination. This is Bush never tried that, but Obama is doing it. Targeting people for their First Amendment free speech rights. It happened right here in my home city of Chicago. These people will probably end up going to jail. targeted for the First Amendment free speech rights, and the Supreme Court affirmed this right. The Supreme Court. I don't think the Supreme Court ever did that before, at least the way the Roberts Court did it. That's in my article. There's plenty in my article. Two parts, 2 days. I don't want to make it too long in one day, or nobody will read it all. It'll be long enough in 2 days. But it's great reference stuff, because you can read one section and then another, and go back to it anytime, and just see exactly what's going on. Then decide, is this the man and is this the administration you want to support? Well, I never supported him going back to the beginning. In my first article, in part one, I went back to his Senate voting record. If you struck the name Obama, deleted it, and just look at the way Senator X voted, he was as Republican as most Republicans, supporting all the corporate interests. And this was a guy people had faith in coming into office. And I still remember how Chicago erupted like New Year's Eve on election night, when about 10 o'clock at night, CNN on the big screen in downtown Chicago, I wasn't there, but I wrote about it a little bit. They had a big screen waiting for the final results. And when Obama was declared the winner, Chicago went absolutely nuts. And I just shook my head. I was asleep. But I read about it the next day and wrote about it. When I read about it, I just shook my head and said, just wait. Just wait. The only thing that surprised me was that he turned out even worse than I imagined. Much worse. I expected nothing. And I got much less than nothing. As right-wing an administration as Republicans, the people who say he's a socialist, well, he is a socialist, just like Bush was a socialist. For business, not for people. We have socialism for the rich, and we have law of the jungle, free market capitalism for everybody else. You're on your own, tough. That's the system we have. And it doesn't matter whether you have Obama or Bush or Clinton or Reagan or the last year or two of Jimmy Carter. That is the system. Well, the last 2 years of Carter was nothing like what we have now. But it kick-started the process that just kept going and will keep going unless people power change it. That's what we're living under right now, plus a state of permanent war, literally permanent war. And I wrote about that going back decades ago, I think back during the Johnson administration, when there was work done and a study done that determined that this country could not afford to have peace. We could not afford to have a country of peace. It was lunacy to have a conclusion like that, because we could be much more prosperous at peace than at war if we devoted our resources toward peacemaking instead of war making. The bang for the buck, if you pardon the expression, delivers much more in a peacetime economy than a wartime economy. There's so much that can be done in this peacetime economy that is sacrificed for the wartime one. The state of America's infrastructure, for one, high-speed rail, a green economy. There is so much that we could pour hundreds of billions of dollars into, and we would have them if we dismantled our military apparatus. And boy, does it ever need to be dismantled, because if it isn't, then Chalmers Johnson is right. It's heading the country toward tyranny and ruin. Bankruptcy and tyranny. And that was his conclusion. That's my conclusion. And I fear that's what's down the road, unless there's a way to stop this. But it doesn't have to be this way. It really is a shame. We should be a model for the world. Instead, we're an outrage. More and more people around the world see what we're doing, and they understand it a lot better than most Americans. I haven't voted for a Republican or a Democrat in so long I can't remember the last time. I'll vote for Mickey Mouse before I'd vote for a Republican or a Democrat, because they will let you down. They will let you down. They will make promises, and they'll break them one after another. Virtually every promise of importance that Obama has made, he broke. I'll mention one thing before we go off the air, because we're getting near that time. He promised net neutrality. I've quoted him a couple of times. It's very clear He promised net neutrality, the last free and open space for democratic speech online on the internet. It's being I started an article, then I stopped it to do another one. I'll finish that, and then I'll finish my latest update on net neutrality threatened. I did three others. This will be the fourth. But there will be a debate in the FCC on next Tuesday on new rules proposed by the FCC chairman, and they're not good. They augur ill for net neutrality. There are three Democrats and two Republicans on that committee. The chairman is a Democrat. If he sides with the Republicans, maybe kiss net neutrality goodbye. Have to discuss that in a future program because it's a vital, vital topic. Free speech, we lose that. I mean, they could decide that they don't want programs like this on the air. We're online, remember? We'll pick this up. I will send Emmanuel an email. I'll be very polite. I do want to get him back. Something must have come up, I'm sure. And I will try to schedule him again to get him back. Do join us this weekend. It's very rare that a guest doesn't show up. Extremely, I've been very lucky, very, very rare. Stuff happens, as Rumsfeld once said. Even people are not able to come on the air as planned, but I promise I'll get them back. And two great programs coming up this weekend, one on the economy. That is so important. All the programs are important, big topics, stuff that people need to know. Do join us then, Saturday and Sunday, 1 p.m. Eastern. Absolutely make it a regular habit. Apologies for missing Emmanuel today.